And this is Larry again, and this is our third session. What we were doing is talking about the questions that we had, and so this is our session number three where we're talking about the questions. So Beate says, after abandoning their spouse, lying, cheating, hurting us, can they ever be happy with themselves if they don't work with the professionals to solve their own inner problems? So this is a good question about working with a professional. And when we're talking about working with a professional, we're talking about people in the mental health business. That's therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, counselors, all kinds of people that are in this business of working with the mind. I have listened to a lot of people over the years talk about their experience with therapists. There is literally no standards in the therapist business. There is no standards at all. And the reason is because I hear stories about therapists that one way, highly personal, very astute, very intuitive, very wise. And then all your stories of people that are insensitive, sometimes crude, sometimes obnoxious, all the way on the other extreme. I hear them all across the spectrum. And I the only thing I can conclude is after people get out of college, they don't have a standards system that they actually live. You know, they may test on the standard system, but they don't actually live it. And the reason I know they don't live it is because all the people are telling me and giving me a report card on the therapy industry. The reason I bring that up is because if you're going to find a therapist, you really need to interview them before you commit to them. A man or a woman, it has to be somebody who you have a sense that this person has something that I need. And if you get that sense that this person has something that I need, then that's somebody who could possibly help you. Don't just step into a therapist just because they're college trained. That's no guarantee of anything. You really do have to pre-interview them and sit with them, say, do I have a sense that you have what I need? Beate is bringing up the idea, your husband, your midlife crisis husband doesn't work with a professional. What that husband needs to do when he's finally ready, because, you know, we don't know where midlife crisis men go. When they disappear from the body, and they're no longer in the body, we don't know where they go. We don't know what they're doing. We don't know if they're buried in a basement somewhere. We don't know. What happens, though, is if you want any chance of freeing your man from his mind, which is freeing your man from his group, the only real route you have is to free yourself from your own group. That's the only possibility you have, because no behavior in the world can save your man from his midlife crisis. No amount of talking, no amount of acting can possibly save him, because this is not a body problem. This is a mind problem. And you have to be in the mind to solve the mind. And so that's really what this group idea is. This is the mind. This is where everything happens. This is where the world is made. This is where we can't even comprehend the vast complexity that the subconscious mind manages. We can't. I mean, it's growing flowers in Brazil while it grows a tree in Oak Park, Illinois, while it moves waves across the ocean in California. We don't know all the things that the mind is doing. We can't comprehend it. So it's beyond our little state here to really know what the mind can do. But one thing we do know is that once we can put ourselves in a discipline where we can manage our inner child, our mother, our father, and that's the mother and father of those days. It's not the mother and father of today. It's the mother and father of those days, of that same time when you were 6 years old. That's the time that they were, and being who they were, and believing like they were, and saying the kinds of things they said, and having the attitudes they had. That's what was happening. And so when you manage that group, child, the mother, the father, and your Freddie, you are doing a great, great work. And when you do this great, great work, the first one that gets the rewards are you. You get the rewards. You're the first one in line to get the rewards of living this life that I'm explaining. And then after you calm the group, then you go and build that relationship with your higher self. And every single day that you go to your higher self's tent and interact to say that phrase, show me the way, you're saying that every day, because you might be a little thick and a little dense and a little resistant, and you may not be able to hear the answer to show me the way, but eventually you will. You will hear it when you least expect it. and you will have an awareness moment where you will just know. I will know that I know that I know where the way is. And then when you go to that little stage in front of the subconscious mind, just feel what you want to feel. Just feel what you want to feel, because that's the language that the subconscious mind understands. Just feel it. You don't have to have words. You can have some words, but you don't have to have words. Just feel it. After abandoning their spouse, lying, cheating, and hurting us, she laid that out first. Can they ever be happy with themselves? Well, remember, the person who's doing the lying, the cheating, the abandoning is not the person you're married to. It's his group. His group is doing the lying, the cheating, and the hurting us. When Beati was writing this, she was saying, this lying, cheating, hurting spouse, can they ever be happy with themselves after knowing that they're lying, cheating, and hurting, and abandoning? No. No, they can't. But see, real true freedom is in forgiveness. And so you are the first person to do the forgiving. Your forgiveness is the first step in anybody being free anywhere, and you being the first person. Forgiveness, about what forgiveness is. This is not religious forgiveness. This is what's called quantum forgiveness. So quantum forgiveness is a very simple idea. Quantum forgiveness comes from quantum physics, and quantum physics teaches that at the level of the electron, we are all one. At the level of the subatomic particle, we are all one. We are all united. Before we grow up into molecules and tissues and organs and bodies, before we grow up into a world, we are all one. And so quantum forgiveness says we are all one. So when I forgive myself, I forgive you. When I forgive you, I forgive myself. It happens all at the same time. So this is quantum forgiveness. And we differentiate that from religious forgiveness. Religious forgiveness says you are separate from me. I am separate from you. You hurt me, but I'm going to forgive you anyway because I'm a good person. That's religious forgiveness. Quantum forgiveness is not like that. It says all of us are one. And so when I forgive you, I forgive me, or I forgive myself, I forgive you. And so here's the words of quantum forgiveness. It's three statements, and you won't remember them if you don't write them down. But here's the first statement. We are good. That's the first statement. We are good, period. The second statement is pure and innocent. Pure and innocent, period. And the third statement is all is forgiven and released. All is forgiven and released. That's the third statement. And you can do this lots of times per day. You'll say, we are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. And the real power of that is the moment somebody offends you. That's the moment when it's the most powerful. Because when you are offended, when you are hurt, when you are shocked, when you are blown away by somebody's behavior that's offensive to you, all you have to do is say, we are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. I would put more weight on you working with your group than I would a professional who is going to do something not particularly predictable with your midlife crisis man, is that when you manage your group, your vibration changes. When your vibration changes, that means his group is feeling the vibration of you. When his group feels the vibration of you, his group really concludes, and I say it this way, oh, don't mess with her. Don't mess with her, because you are a leader of minds, and they can feel leadership. And when they feel leadership in the area, they tend to become less free and less reckless. And so I would rely on that before I rely on an unpredictable therapist. Beati also said, sometimes those situations remind me of Criminal Minds, the TV show, which seems like the midlife crisis on steroids. And all those cases were fact-based, and I saw hundreds of times how screwed up childhoods can turn a person to become totally insane. Forgive me, but I feel the midlife crisis is a form of insanity. No forgiveness is needed for that. So Paula, she said, the problem with my husband is in 2017, he was 48, he got depression, but I thought he'd get over it quickly. Last year in November, when he was 51, he had an affair. And my question is, do you think the midlife crisis can run on the family? My husband does not know his grandfather, but from what he knows, he was also homeless. So it looks like the midlife crisis is something from childhood. Paul is getting at depression shows up, a death shows up, a loss shows up. And what are these events? These are events that the group reacts to. Remember, the group is living in the past. in the time of that childhood. That's where they live. They live in that time. But they're reacting to events in the current day. So your husband's a really great guy until he's 52. And all of a sudden, when he's 52, something happens out there in the world. And all of a sudden, the group suddenly becomes activated and alive. And now they're in business. And then they knock him out. They put him somewhere. We don't know where. And then they start running the body. The body of your husband is being run by the group. And that's what makes midlife crisis so crisis-like. Because the man is not there anymore. See, if he was there, he would say something that's like himself. Like himself. He would be able to say something. He would be able to express himself somehow. When that event happens, this could be the death of a spouse, the death of a father, death of a mother, the death of a friend, any deaths that really are meaningful, the loss of a job, the loss of a business, the loss of something that really, really matters and really is important. But what is that? That's literally a trigger event that turns on a childhood system. We don't comprehend that. We don't know how it works. We can't get into the wiring and undo it or anything like that. That's really not where the solution lies. The solution is not in talking about the intricacies of how the midlife crisis works. That isn't going to help us at all. What's going to help us is being able to manage our own group, be able to change our own vibration, be able to have an ongoing daily relationship with our higher self and speak to the subconscious mind and say what we want. The subconscious mind was listening to the group. And the more chaotic your life was, the more the group spoke to the subconscious mind. And remember how it did that. It wore you, the group would wear you down, get weak enough, and then you just say, oh, okay. That's you saying, all right, go ahead and do whatever it is you're going to do. And that's when you're not the leader of mind. So you're just a pinball. You're bouncing off stimulations. And so the group was able to tell the subconscious mind the world it wanted. And it did it many, many times. It could do it for sickness. It can do it for money or the lack of money. It can do it for relationships. It can do it for any adventure of success. Anything in life it can do. Because it wears you down and then you decide. And once you make the decision, the subconscious mind has now had the group release onto it and saying, make us this world. And remember, the subconscious mind will listen to anything the mind is saying if you give it permission. If you say, okay, let's do that, you have just made a decision. And you haven't made the decision. You've just given up. You've been worn out. I don't know if you ever had the experience of feeling worn down and worn out by the subconscious mind telling you over and over and over again, badgering you and pressuring you, and finally you just go, all right. And that's not decision-making. That's just being a pinball and reacting. So you don't want to live like that. You don't want to live like a pinball who just reacts. When a midlife crisis comes into your life, Paul is saying, the problem with my husband started in 2017 when he was 48 years old. Does it matter when your husband collapsed? Does it matter how old he was? No. Does it matter that he got depression? No. Does it matter that he got over it really quick? No. Does it matter that last year in November he was 51 and he had an affair? No. None of that matters. Why does none of that matter? Because it doesn't change anything. Having all of that knowledge and all of that understanding and all that explanation doesn't help you. It doesn't assist you in taking you where you want to be. What really does is managing the mind. And managing the mind is the job of knowing how to manage that inner child, how to manage that mother, how to manage that father, how to manage that Freddie. Those are the four entities of the mind. And if they're not under your management, they are not under management at all. And I've seen what they can do to people. And it's really, in the very least, it's very inconvenient. At the very worst, it's just horribly painful and seemingly unresolvable. And the places we go to try to solve this problem of this mind, this out-of-control mind, this mind that has no leader, that's really what we should say. We should say this is a mind that has no leader. And when you find a person who has whose mind has no leader, you're looking at a person who's going to be in a lot of pain. And sometimes the pain comes as the characters in our life. You know, a very difficult mother, a very difficult father, a very difficult sister, a very difficult business partner, a very difficult and painful whoever you want to fill in there. But all of that is being made by the mind. under the leadership of the group, and you do not want to be living any more days with the group running your life. So Wanda says, my husband is a low-energy wallflower. He is one who easily blocks people off. It can be a coworker, a family friend that rubs them the wrong way. You can stand right next to him, and he's trained himself to act as if you don't exist. You can faint, and he will act as if nothing happened. He's blocked his family and his friends because of his ego and stubbornness. To block, ignore his surroundings. Will he be able to recover? Will it take him longer than most? He doesn't like people much, but he has an amazing sense of humor, but prefers to do things alone. Will he ever be able to get better or come back if he trains his mind? So here's what Wanda's saying. And Wanda's saying something very, very normal. Here's the very normal, she's saying. She's saying, I got this relationship who's right near me, and here is what he's like. And she took all that trouble to write all about him, right? Why did she write all about him? She thinks that if we understand who he is and what he's like, we'll have the answer. No, we won't. If we understand who he is and what he's like, we still have nothing close to the answer. And all these facts that we now know about this wallflower husband who blocks people off and cuts people out, and he does all these problems that he has, right? How does that help us? It doesn't help us at all. Because all we're doing is talking about the situation. The situation is he's a wallflower, a low-energy wallflower. The situation is he blocks people off. See, the more you talk about the situation, the less solution you have. And so what that leads is to the statement, there is no solution in the situation. There is no solution in the situation. It's hard to hear. There is no solution in the situation. So I'll say it a third time. So Wanda's giving us the opportunity to see that no matter how much she describes this guy and what he's suffering under, she finally ends with this question, will he ever be able to come back if he trains his mind? Well, how could a man who, remember, we don't know where he is. We don't know where the man is. We know where the group is. The group is right there at the top of the body running everything. And we know that. But we don't know where he is. And so she asks the question, will he ever be able to come back if he trains his mind? How would a man in this kind of, we don't know where he is. He's kind of mind no man's land. We don't know where he is. What can he do? We don't know, because we don't know where he is and we don't know what he's capable of. We know what the group is capable of, separation and destruction. We know that, but we don't know where the man is. And so we can't ask a question about the man. Will he ever be able to come back if he trains his mind? Well, how could he train his mind if he's in a place where he doesn't even know what the mind is? How can he train his mind? So what I tend to lean towards is that the midlife crisis person, most of them are fairly weak people. They're fairly energetically weak people. They don't have the strength of their convictions. They don't have the ability to really to act in a real decisive way. For instance, if you gave your midlife crisis husband the document, the group how-to manual, and say, here, the answer's in here, read this. Could he do it? Could he even hear you? Or would the group be receiving the document? And they go, hey, you're writing about us, you know? I think that the midlife crisis man needs to be saved because he can't save himself. Because if he had any signs of saving himself, he'd be showing signs of saving himself. He'd be showing signs of waking up. He'd be showing signs of admitting, I don't think I've been very good to you, you know, or things like that. He'd be able to say things that are in his right mind. But when the group is managing his body, when the group is managing body, the group never is self-reflecting and never thinks about the future. It all thinks about the past. All it's trying to do is create the past and all the most painful things of the past. That's what the group is all about. So where is the man in there? I think he needs to be saved. And so if you are near him and you can manage your group and become very successful at managing your group, you will give off the vibration of the leader of minds. And when the group of his picks up the leader of minds, they will back off. Now, we don't know how long that will take, but you'll see signs. You'll see signs that they are backing off and releasing him. Maybe it might be a moment. Maybe it might be an hour a day. Might be about half a day. But you'll start to see things are changing. And why are they changing? Because you are the leader of minds. And you affect all minds. And it's just something you just have to try. You have to just try it out and stick with it. And so I say, give it 30 days. Write it on your calendar. I'm going to be doing this leader. I'm going to be leading my group for 30 days. And at the end of 30 days, I'm going to check my calendar and see 30 days of group management. It's going to 30 days of group management. And then I'm going to write it in my calendar. And then I'm going to look up and ask, what happened? What happened in 30 days? What's different? And that's a really good question. What is different? So Wanda is giving us the illustration of describing in great detail the problem. And what she's doing is illustrating how you dwell on the situation and you don't have a solution. And that's what most of us do. And then Stacy said, my husband came home after a year. He's been home a year and all things are going well between us. I think he's still in the midlife crisis. He seems to be depressed and doesn't enjoy things the way he used to. He's short-tempered with the kids. So here's Stacy writing about a man who did the wonderful thing everybody wants. He came home, right? But he came home and he's still not quite in his right mind. He's still not himself. He came back to the house, but he's still not himself. So Stacy would do really well to give herself that 30-day test and say, for 30 days, I'm going to do nothing but manage my group. And I'm going to see in 30 days what's different. And then Amanda wrote, how do I get him to work on himself while I work on me? And so it's not a mutual thing. There is no mutual matching thing going on when you have a midlife crisis man. He doesn't work on himself while you work on yourself. That's not the way it is. He does nothing. And you manage the group. And you got to be willing to let him do nothing while you manage the group. Because I said earlier that we don't know where he goes when the group takes over the body. We don't know where he goes. But let's say he's put in some kind of a basement where he's been trapped in some kind of basement room, kind of like surrounding, where there's no windows or doors and he can't get out. And he's trapped. So if he's trapped, there's nothing he can do from that prison cell that he's in. Let's say there is some kind of prison cell. He has to be in temporarily. Can you rescue him? Can you rescue him by managing the group? And I suspect you can. And so that is our 20th question. And so we'll stop here. And by the way, do we have any questions in the question box if anybody wants to write? Let's see, Renee says, so did we actually cause the midlife crisis by giving in to our group and changing the vibration? If we become the leader of minds and the midlife crisis husband returns, can he be re-triggered? It seems like a lot of work and pressure on us to keep this relationship. So Renee is looking, I'm glad she's explained this this way. Look at the world that she's portraying. The first thing she's doing, she's saying, did we cause it? Is this our fault? And what is she doing here? She's looking to establish fault. That's what this thought. So I'll read it again. So did we actually cause the midlife crisis by giving into our group and changing the vibration? So what is she doing there? She's asking, who's at fault here? Is it me? Did I do it? And I want to stop here on the subject of fault, because how would help establishing whose fault it was? How would that help you, him, or anybody that matters? How would establishing fault help anything? The truth is, the fact is, it wouldn't help anyone. Who's in the fault-finding business? Well, who's in charge of judgment? The parents. The mother and the father are in charge of judgment. And so what are they going to do? They're going to say to you, you need to find out whose fault this is. And so Renee wrote that first part, which is, did we actually cause this? Well, why would you spend any energy trying to find out who caused it? It isn't going to help you at all. The group caused it. You didn't cause it. It's not something you did. You, as the pursuer of happiness, would never cause something like this. You don't want to even think that, but you also don't want to look to establish blame anywhere. And then she writes, if we become the leader of minds and the midlife crisis husband returns, can he be re-triggered? So here's the next thought that Renee is bringing up. I'm always looking for what's wrong. I'm always looking for failure. I'm always looking for what can break, what can bust, what can be destroyed, what can be flooded. I'm always looking. So I want to ask about, first of all, who's at fault? And second of all, I want to ask about, can it be re-triggered? Re-triggered, that's an interesting word. Re-triggered, re-turned on. The whole mess starts all over again. Re-triggered. And she's asking this because the group is telling her to ask it. Renee is not asking this. Her group is asking. And so what is she doing? She's doing what the group tells her to do. And this is how we all live. We all live with the ideas of the group. All the judgments, all the fears, all the attacks of the group, that's what we're living on. Calling this out because Renee is helping us do this. Why would she bring up the idea of re-triggered? Because the group is telling Renee it can be re-triggered. It could start all over again. We can be in charge all over again. And then she writes the third idea. It seems like a lot of work and pressure on us to keep this relationship. What is this idea from? It's from the group. What is that? That's a judgment. It's a judgment. Because what do judgments do from the mother and the father? What do judgments do? Because they're in the judgment business. What do judgments do? Judgments say, this is never going to work. That's stupid. Oh my God, not that again. Those are all judgments. I'm thinking of this idea. What did the group tell Renee? Number one, it said, did we cause it? Is it our fault? What's the number two idea? Okay, let's say we become the leader of minds. Will it be turned on again? Will it all get bad again? And the third idea, boy, that seems like a lot of work. I don't want to do all that work to keep this relationship going. Those are all ideas of the group. Those are not Renee's ideas. Those are group ideas. And she was helping us illustrate what it's like when we listen to the group and don't even realize we're doing it. We're just repeating what they tell us. Let's see. Beate says, what if I finally stop loving him? Okay, there's another message from the group. Why is this from the group? What if I finally stop loving him? What is that idea about? Oh my God, stop the pain. Oh, stop. How are you going to stop the pain? Well, why don't you just stop loving him? Isn't that a group idea? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You know, when you think about the divine mind is infinitely patient. It never runs out of patience. So your higher self never runs out of patience. Your higher self would never say, well, what if I just finally stop loving him and then I can be done with all this? I can be done with all this pain and suffering. Well, that's a group idea. The group is constantly saying, how can I get out of pain? And then Beate also wrote, I am finally not interested in him anymore, but still think with sadness about the past. Okay, so when we're talking about the past, what are we talking about? We're talking about the world of the group. The group is about the past. It's not about the future ever. It's always about recreating the past. What Beate is saying is, I think about him with sadness. What is that sadness? The sadness is, you know, we had something really good. Why couldn't we keep it? The answer is the group doesn't let you keep joy. It doesn't let you keep what you wish for and what you hope for and what you want and what's good and what's valuable. It doesn't want you to keep that. Because why? Because what is their world? Their world is the past. And now let's look at childhood again and ask about whatever happened back there. Whatever happened in those 53,000 hours, that was the imprint for the life that the group makes. That's the imprint of the life. So what is the father, the mother, and the child, and the Freddy, what are they all doing together in that childhood? Well, the more abandonment, the more abuse, and the more neglect that took place in your little life, and the more that mother and father dished out, abandonment, abuse in all its forms, and neglect in all its forms, the more they did that, the more you have a group with lots of tools, right? If you had a really happy, secure childhood with mom and dad who loved you and valued and loved each other, your group is not so big. It's not so strong. But when you had a mother and father who were at odds with each other, divorcing each other, fighting with each other, whatever multiple zillions of things they did, that creates what your group is operating with today. But you got to remember, no matter what the group has, if you're still breathing, you still can become the leader of minds. you can still free yourself from them, but you have to know what you're doing. And so Julie said, husband has been expressing how he hasn't been good to me, caused me so much pain. He expresses how sorry he is for this. He is showing love and tenderness again. Is this an example of the husband waking up, like you mentioned earlier today on the call? So Julie is in the Environment Changer course. I know her story. And her husband is going through this waking up process because Julie is an example of a very good leader of minds. She's been very, very good at being a leader of minds. And she's a great living example of what I'm talking about. I want to read that again. Her husband has been expressing how he hasn't been good to her. What is that? That's regret and remorse. Who can do that? Not the group. That's the man. He has caused me so much pain, he says. He's expressed how sorry he is for this. And he is showing love and tenderness again. What is that? That's the man right there. That's the only way you can define the man. That's not the group. The group would never express tenderness and sorrow and regret ever, ever, ever. Julie is doing this. She's the leader of minds. Sure enough, he's coming in the direction of a free man. And Beate wrote, how can one still desire a man who hurt me that much? And so this is the idea of forgiveness, quantum forgiveness. Now, we have to differentiate that from religious forgiveness because Beate is asking a really good question. Okay, this person hurts me and hurts me and hurts me, and I have all these memories of all this hurt. Okay, look at the picture. I've got all the memories of all this hurt. Where are those memories of all this hurt? It's sitting here in my mind. And who is that all that hurt with? Who is it being stored with? It's being stored with the child who fears. It's being stored with the mom and dad who judge. And it's being stored with the Freddy who attacks. It's being stored with them. They're keeping it alive. They're keeping all the inability to forgive alive. And so what does quantum forgiveness do? It says we are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. What are you doing? You're saying we. Why are you saying we? Because we are one. That's what the quantum forgiveness idea is about. We are one. At the level of the electron, we are all one. Before we grow up in all these separate things, we are one. And so what are you reminding yourself? We are good. You are good, you who hurt me, and I am good, whatever my problems are. We are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. And you do that again and again and again. And you keep focusing not on what the man did and what the group's case that they have on him, because what they want to do is they want to keep the past alive. That's their whole mission, keep the past alive. And what is the past? It's all the hurts and all the pain that they dished out on you, that they dished out on you. And when I say they, I'm talking about his group and your group. Together, they were working together to crush you in a vice and make you feel a lot of pain. And so when you do quantum forgiveness, what you're doing is you're saying, I'm washing away your whole group activity. I'm washing away his group activity. I'm washing away my group activity. We are good, pure and innocent. All is forgiven and released. And you can do that again and again and again. And day after day after day, as you keep on repeating that phrase, you're focusing on quantum forgiveness. You're focusing on we are all forgiven. We're all pure and innocent. We're all forgiven and released. That's what you're focusing on. Well, if you're focusing on that, what are you not focusing on? The group, the fear of the child, the judgment of the mother, the judgment of the father, and the attack of Freddy. You're not focusing on that. You're not thinking about it. You're thinking about forgiveness. And quantum forgiveness is something the group can't stand. They really shy away from quantum forgiveness. They don't like it. They want you to stop it. And you'll feel that sometimes. You'll feel the pressure of them saying, stop doing that. They don't like quantum forgiveness. You want a way to slow down your group. Do quantum forgiveness every day. And so Beate is saying, I can't love him and I can't forgive him because my group won't let me. That is a true statement. I can't love him. I can't forgive him. I'm too hurt because the group is keeping it alive. They're keeping all the events alive. They're replaying them in your imagination. They're making you feel them over and over and over again. Because the truth is, the group in this world is not lovable. They're really not. They're not lovable. They're just terribly misguided children, and they're very, very destructive. And they do some terrible things. But that's just their nature. their nature is to do some really terrible things. But you do not want to get like the group to solve the group. Don't get like the group to solve the group, because you won't. You won't solve anything. You'll just become more like them. So if you have a man who's really hurt you a lot, why are you in the mess you're in? Because the group is keeping everything he did alive. They're keeping it alive. They're reactivating it in your imagination. They're making you see it. They're making you feel it. They're pushing and pushing, making you relive it again and again and again. And that's why you're living the way you're living. I've spent a lot of time with people in pain, a lot of time. And I've talked to them, deep, long conversations about their pain. And over and over again, it simply comes down to the group is keeping the pain alive. And until you finally realize the group is keeping it alive, I'm not keeping it alive. I'm the conscious mind. I pursue happiness. That's my identity. I don't do this group stuff. I don't do this. I don't keep pain alive. That's not what I do. That's not my identity. My identity is I pursue happiness. And so now the question becomes, am I going to become the leader of minds? Can you even say the phrase out loud to yourself? Say it out loud. I am the leader of minds, dot, dot, dot. This is what we're going to do. I am the leader of minds. This is what we're going to do. That's a statement of leadership. When you make that statement, you're telling the group, I'm the leader of minds. And why? Because I make decisions. You can't make decisions. I know you got me to make decisions by wearing me out. But now I realize I'm the leader of minds because I can make this. I'm the only one that can make a decision. So since I'm the only one, the conscious mind is the only one that can make a decision, I'm going to make a decision. And my decision is I'm going to go and work the route. And step one is to go in the tent and do what's described in the group how-to manual. How do you calm down the group? And then I'm going to go to my higher self, and I'm going to build that relationship every single morning. And I'm going to raise my frequency as I walk towards the higher self. And then I'm going to say that phrase. I'm going to say, show me the way. And then I'm going to go to my subconscious mind, and I'm going to stand on that little stage, and I'm going to tell the subconscious mind the feelings I have of how I want to be. And now that I've said that, I'm going to say my feelings of how I want my life to be. When you've been pummeled by the group for years, starting with the messages of mom and dad and the reactions of you as the child, you may not even believe that it's even possible for you to lead anything. You may be so pummeled and so discouraged and so put down and so convinced that the way of the group is the only way to live. You may be so convinced that you just don't even have a hint that what I'm saying is possible. You don't even have a hint. Like, oh, that all sounds really good, but I just don't know if I'm worthy. I don't know if I'm good enough. I don't know if I can have a life that's that good. That life sounds really good to me, and I'm really so guilty. I feel so bad. I don't even know if I deserve such a life. You'd be surprised how very common that is for people to conclude, I don't deserve such a good life. And why don't you? Because the mother and the father put the message that you don't deserve such a good life. You deserve a life of suffering, a life of loss, a life of denial. That's what you deserve. So there's the idea, and the group owns that idea, and they manage that idea, and they push that idea, and they push that idea into your imagination day after day after day. And so you're a very discouraged person. You don't believe that you deserve something better, that you can have something better, because the group is holding you firmly in place, just like the childhood made you in those 55,000 hours. So now the question is, if you're that discouraged, where is the very first place you begin? The very first spot. Because the group, they're surrounding you on all sides. They own every piece of property. They own all the streets and the alleys and the byways and the highways. They own everything. And you can't go anywhere where they're not. So let's imagine that you're living there. And that's the place where you're trapped. In this place where they own everything and you own nothing. So in this place of total loss and desolation, where you don't believe you deserve anything, you can't have anything, you're not worthy, you don't deserve anything. Okay, in that place where you have no resources and you're quietly, you know, holding to yourself and this shaking little figure, and you think a thought, one thought, the very first thought. And what is that one thought? I am the leader of vines. This is what we are going to do. That's the thought. Even though you've lost everything, don't deserve anything, everything's been taken away from you, you say, I am the leader of vines. This is what we're going to do. And you say that to yourself. Just say it to yourself in your mind. And then you say the words out loud. I am the leader of minds. This is what we're going to do. And you say it again and again. I am the leader of minds. This is what we're going to do. And you say it again and again and again. And the next day, you say it again and again. And then you go for a walk and you say it again and again. I am the leader of minds. This is what we're going to do. I am the leader of minds. This is what we're going to do. As you continue to say the phrase, I am the leader of minds, this is what we're going to do, you're bringing a brand new light into your life, something that's never existed before. Well, just think of it alone. The words have never been said before. You have never said, I am the leader of minds. This is what we're going to do. You've never said it. The idea has never entered into your mind. And because it's never entered into your mind, it never existed. So what are you doing now? You're saying it first in your mind, inside, you're thinking it, and then you're saying it out loud with your mouth. I am the leader of minds. This is what we're going to do. And then you go for a walk, and you're walking and saying it. And now your body's moving around the world, and you're saying the phrase, I am the leader of minds. This is what we're going to do. And now the question I'd ask right here, before you start concluding that this leads to anything else, the question you want to ask yourself is, if I'm doing this, if I'm walking and saying to myself, I'm the leader of minds, this is what we're going to do, what's going to happen to me? What is going to happen to me? See, you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what this idea is going to lead to. You have no way of knowing. You're absolutely entering the world of the unknown. And the world of the unknown is a really good place because all possibilities exist in the unknown. As Joe Dispenza wrote in his book, Becoming Supernatural, the unknown is a wonderful place and it's never let me down. That's what Joe Dispenza wrote in his book. It's a wonderful place and it's never let me down. And so you are going to be walking into the world of the unknown when you say, I am the leader of minds. This is what we're going to do. And since you have the document, the how-to group manual, you could read it once and maybe you won't be able to concentrate on it the first time you read it. But the second time you read it, you might be able to pick up a little piece here and there. And the third time you read it, maybe a week later, you might be able to pick up some other little idea that starts to become believable to you. And you start to see things that you've never seen before. And that's actually how you begin to move step by step to a life where you can actually live on this map and start to become the leader of minds. Because that's really where your hope is. Your hope is in becoming the leader of minds. Thanks for listening, and I hope this is a life changer for you.